Okay, everyone, welcome. Thursday night class, Thursday night shiur, Parshas Mishpatim. We will continue. We're going to start a new discourse, but it's in continuation to what we've been learning in the last three Thursday night classes. This class is called A Leap of Love. It's on the Mimer. We will be learning the discourse in Shir HaShirim, and the Song of Songs, and Lakuti Torah on Shir HaShirim, where the Alter Rebbe, on Daf Mem Beis, the name of the Mimer is Hine Inyan Medalig Ala Harim. Behold, the idea of him leaping over the mountains. That's a verse in Song of Songs, where it says, Kol Doidi, the voice of my beloved, Hine Zeba, behold, he is coming. Medalig ala harim, he's leaping over the mountains. So, the last discourse we learned, we spent three classes on that, was called Shishim Hema Malachis. 60 are the queens, 80 are the concubines, and young women without a number. We were learning the meaning of that verse in Song of Songs. Now, this discourse that we're learning now is an explanation. It's a biur on that mimer. In some of the versions, it's actually called biur. Some of the versions of the discourse is called biur on. And the whole mimer is actually the same like when we learn a biur, where it says biur ala inyan. This is the idea. It starts in the inyan medalig ala harim, but it's really a biur on the previous discourse. A biur means an explanation. The Alter Rebbe expounds on things that he's explained earlier. So almost, this is almost like class number four in the previous discourse that we've been learning. We've been learning the awesomeness of Torah. And we've been learning how there is a great chasm that exists between our entire reality, the reality of the worlds, our existing all after a complete shutdown of God's existence, and there isn't even a tiny little crumb of a crumb of a crumb of the infinite translated into creation. Creation is like a whole new reality after God completely removes his true self. And a complete hiding of God's existence, of God's true existence. He dims himself down till he leaves nothing left. He retracts his light completely. And then he emanates a whole new type of an energy, a ray, which is nothing of his substance, nothing of the true existence of God. And from within that ray, that's the godliness that becomes part of creation, becomes part of our reality, part of the finite realms, which continue on to create and create and create the entire chain-like evolution of worlds, which is boundless and endless. And as if you can listen to class number two, I got a little excited and we did a whole journey into the galaxies, into the size of the universe. We weren't going into the spiritual world. We were just discussing the size of the physical universe, how boundless it is, how enormous, how incredibly spectacular. And yet that's the lowest of all these forms of existence. And above this world is an endless chain of worlds. However, the entire endless chain of worlds is created only, doesn't have a crumb of his truth being. And God creates it as if by being outside of it. His energy wills it, but he doesn't enter into it in that sense. He's infinitely above his true self. And that's called the Soviv Kalam, and that's God's true light, his true energy. Then there is this nothing of existence, which to him the ray that later comes in to create, that does enter and does lend itself into creation and become part of the creation, become like the soul of creation, and the energy that is like, you can say, is invested and part of creation, the entire, that in, incredible, awesome energy, producing such an awesome world, is from his perspective absolutely nothing. And therefore, so much so that creation to him is a non-event, as if it never happened. As we discussed, so there is an. So and what are we? We're kind of caught. We're stuck. We have no other. We can journey. We can journey along in this boundless nothingness, but forever remain trapped in the nothingness of existence. We will always be after the. We will never be able to cross the chasm to God Himself. That's outside of this entire element of creation. And therefore, that means we will always remain swimming in nothingness. And that's where Sinai comes in, God's infinite kindness, and that's why we get all excited when we say, Koyol doidi, behold, the voice of my beloved, he's coming. What does that mean? My beloved is the one that my heart yearns for. In other words, once someone realizes the absolute nothingness of all of existence, of all of creation, both the material and the spiritual, and one realizes its utter, absolute valuelessness, its nothingness, so the heart strives, or the heart yearns, or the heart desires, or the heart seeks to attach itself to what is really real, what really deserves to be yearned for, or really deserves to be connected to. And the good thing is that God wants to have a relationship with this nothingness that he created. That's the Torah. Through the Torah, God transmits his very self. God, through the Torah, Hashem transmits his very self down into our realm. We turn on the channel to the transcendental infinite light that is infinitely beyond creation. It is channeled into our narrow nothingness of existence through the Torah. And we were learning, in other words, we need a recipient to receive the infinite light and translate it into the world. Who is the recipient? The Torah is the recipient. And that's why the Torah is called the wife of God. Just like a wife is a recipient of her husband. And how does she receive her husband? By becoming one with him. And that's how she can, that's how she becomes one with him. And then she can transmit him. She transmits him to her children. She creates children that is an image of him. Image of her and him. But she creates children. So in the same sense, the Torah is God's queen. She's a recipient. She's the vessel. Well, that's the point. A woman is the vessel. And the man is considered the energy, and the woman is considered the vessel. So the Torah is the vessel that captures what is beyond creation, true existence. And in that itself, we learned the Torah itself is divided into the queens, the concubines, and the young women. And we learned three levels of Torah. Mishnah are the queens, because in the Mishnah, God is very permanently dwelling. And the Mishnah captures, are the vessels, what are the Mishnahs? The Mishnah are the vessels of God's emotions. Since there are six primary emotions, there are six orders of the Mishnah. And since in each one of these six orders of Mishnah, which each one corresponds to a different one of God's emotions, in which these emotions, God is coming from beyond our existence into our existence through these emotions. Each one is divided into ten tractates, because each one of the emotions has ten sefirot in the emotions. So therefore, that we have the six emotions of God translates into 60 tractates of Mishnah. And when we're learning the Mishnah, we are tuning into God Almighty Himself. So much so that when a person learns, is the main primary theme that we were learning, was so much so that when a person is learning, they dissolve. It's not the person studying, and it's not you're not quoting, or it's not that the Mishnah states something. The Mishnah is God himself talking. The voice at Sinai, the transcendental voice that's above existence, you're now tuning into that very same voice at Sinai. It's manifesting in this world God's will, God's tastes. God Almighty's tastes, what is tasteful to him and what is distasteful to him. And if we ever think that we can mix in and try to add our own little two cents of why it should be like this and why it shouldn't be like that, that's absolute idiocy. Because how in the world, if all of existence is absolutely nothing in front of God, and here we're getting God to share with us his emotions, so what are we going to correct his emotions? And tell him, we think it should be a little different. The Torah law should be a little different. Torah is absolute. But it's God's emotions. It's how he sees. It's his kindness, his severity, his beauty, his compassion, and so on and so forth. Manifesting in the six orders of the Mishnah. Then we learn, so they're considered, that's why it's called 60 queens. Because the queen is openly married to the king. She's a very direct and open vessel. That's the point. She's a constant vessel and container for the king. However, the concubines are of a lesser stature. And we were learning that's the other level of Mishnah, the unedited version of the Mishnah. We say the external Mishnah, where there's a lot of Braisa. Braisa are the statements of the rabbis who are the same rabbis of the Mishnah, but it's not the most edited version. It's the more outside teachings. Braisa means outside. It's still, and where do we find them? Usually in the Talmud. The Talmud, usually on every Mishnah, the Talmud will give you a whole slew of braisas. And that's really what the Talmud is busy doing. It's continuously comparing the Mishnah to the braisa and helping solidify the understanding of the Mishnah based on all these different braisas by rubbing the Mishnah against the braisas, doing comparative analysis between every Mishnah and every braisa, finding usually for every Mishnah six or seven braisas in which it like asks questions and bumps the Mishnah against this one and against that one until you gain clarity in the Mishnah. But that's where, if you want to know where you get to see the braisas, that's where they are. There's also certain books of braisa. They're called Tosefta, and they're in the back of the Talmud. You'll find Tosefta. A famous braisa that you all are familiar with or might be familiar with is the sixth chapter of Tractate of Ethics of the Fathers. We know there are six chapters in the Ethics of the Fathers. Five of them are Mishnah. The last one is braisa. That's why it opens up with the words, Shanu Chachamim Belashin HaMishnah. That the Chachamim, which is really stating a braisa, we're adapting the style of the Mishnah. Now, the style of the Mishnah is it's very short and concise. It usually gets straight to the point. And the Braisa is a little bit more elaborate. So we were learning the Braisa is a vessel for God, but it's not of that same level quality vessel like the Mishnah. So therefore, the Orient Sof dwells in the Braisa. God dwells in the Braisa. The infinite transcendence of God Almighty himself dwells in the Braisa, but not every day or not every moment. Now, that's one part of what we discussed last class. That's a significant part that we didn't really expound on. And that's what's going to be expounded and much clearer in this class. Because what does that mean? When you're studying the Braisa, Monday, God is inside of it, and Tuesday, he's not there. How exactly do you figure that out? What does it mean? As he says, you know, the king only visits the concubine, leprakim, the words, at intervals. So how are you supposed to know? Is your Mishnah going to alert you? Are you going to have a Talmud? Are you going to suddenly start seeing neon lights, you know, suddenly surrounding that Braisa, like the boom, boom, flashing Braisa? How in the world does someone know when God is in the Braisa, when he's not in the Braisa? It's a hard situation. What does it mean he's there and he's not there? In the Mishnah, you can be rest assured. And why would you learn Braisa at all if in the Mishnah you know you'll always find him there? In the Braisa, he might be there, might be there. You might be traveling all the way to the Braisa, knocking and coming to see the king, and the king isn't there. So what's the point? So that needs clarification. And I think by the end of this study that we're going to learn now, we're going to get a better understanding in this whole idea of God's dwelling in the Mishnah. And what does it mean that in the Braisa he's there only leprakim? And another thing to understand, the level of the Ein Sof that's in the Braisa is a little bit more tempered down. It's already a little bit more weaker. So it's, first of all, it's not steady, and it's also a lesser quality. So we need to understand that as well. It's the same thing. It seems to be the same thing like the Mishnah. It's expressing God's tastes, his what he desires, what his emotional tastes are. What things in the world he approves of, and what things in the world he disapproves of, in all different arenas of life. So how is it different? Now let's go to the third part we learned last week. We learned that the Talmud is also a dwelling place for God. But the Talmud, when we say the Talmud, we mean the Talmud by doing all the, what is the Talmud, what's the Talmud primarily occupy? When we say the Talmud, we mean the Gemara, not the Mishnah. Now, in the broader sense, when we say Talmud, when you're going to buy a set of Talmud, for instance, and today you can buy them in English, Art Scroll, or Steinsaltz, there's two English versions, maybe even more, but I know of two. So you can go get there is another Talmud, I forgot the one, that there was an old one, also in English. In any case, so when you purchase a Talmud, the Mishnah is included in it. Because what the Talmud is, it quotes a Mishnah, and then it spends 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pages where it analyzes the Mishnah and tries to explain the ideas. What it's trying to do is explain the thought process of the Mishnah. How did we get to that decision? What's the background? What's the behind the scenes? That's what the Talmud does. And as we said, by trying to clarify it, it takes Mishnah and compares it to other Mishnah first. Sometimes you'll find seemingly contradictory teachings in the Mishnah, so it does a analysis between the Mishnah. Plus, it opens up the door and invites in the Braises, which Braises, again, are the sages of the Mishnah, but the outside of the Mishnah, and does an analysis between all these teachings, comparing it to the Mishnah. But what is this Talmud seeking? It's seeking to understand the reasoning of the Mishnah. That's the main idea, to get to the reasoning. But let's understand something. When the Talmud comes to reasoning of the Mishnah, what it also extrapolates and deduces a whole bunch of new laws that come out of it. Meaning laws that are not stated in the Mishnah and not stated in the Braisa. Because once you fundamentally understand the reasoning of the Mishnah, the Talmud then can produce, based on this reasoning, comes out that this as well is forbidden, or this as well is permitted, based on the same logic and on the same reason. So it comes out that there's a whole bunch of laws that are not stated openly in the Mishnah, but these are laws from the Talmud, and they become part of Jewish observance. Because the way Jewish observance work, the conduct of Shulchan Aruch, the conduct of Jewish law works, is that anything that's stated as a law in the Mishnah and in the Talmud is accepted as we have to follow. Meaning to say, laws that were instituted later, after the Talmud was closed, that means a generation after the Talmud, when rabbis instituted certain laws, they apply only to their communities. They don't apply to the Jewish people as a whole. But whatever is stated in the Talmud is applicable to all of Israel, to all the Jewish people. Now, we find a lot of arguments amongst the latter codifiers of the law. When you have arguments in the Talmud, who do we follow? We follow him, and then you have 1,000 opinions, and it turns into a whole big mishmash. And for that, you need really brilliant scholars to be able to know But in any case, this is just an outline. So those laws that we discussed earlier that the Talmud extrapolates, they are also God's laws. However, and they come from what? From the deep analysis and background that we got from the understanding of the deeper understanding of the Talmud. So what he's saying is that these laws, when you study them, when you say them, they are, each law is considered a vessel. Potentially God can dwell in that vessel. But the light of God is not captured in the vessel, although he's hovering over them. Some of divine illumination is reaching these vessels, or else it wouldn't be holy, and it wouldn't be considered Torah. But it's not in the same way like it's shining in the Mishnah. And that's why she's a full vessel. She's filled, the Mishnah is filled with God's light. She's the woman receiving her husband. However, the laws of the Talmud have a more distant relationship with the man, which in this case is God. So it's like a bunch of girls in the palace that they can potentially be upgraded to be a queen, potentially be vessels. But meanwhile, they're just there as what we might say contestants. That's the idea. What we are going to learn over here is, and as we touched upon it in the last class, but we're going to clarify it and get a better understanding. That's not to degrade the Talmud. That's because the Talmud, actually, those laws are reaching for a much higher light than the Mishnah. Because it's reaching for a much higher light, a much higher and deeper light, a presence of God, a much God as God as God is on a loftier level. In other words, it's not reaching for God's emotions, it's reaching for God's intelligence. And being that God's intelligence is so supreme and so infinite and so incomprehensible, so when you're attempting to trap that in a vessel, if you can get a tiny little crumb of it, you're happy already. The emotions, however, lend themselves more into vessels than the intellect. And that's the reason why the Mishnah can be filled with God's light, because it's the emotions. But the Talmud is the intelligence. So because it is so high, it's elusive to the vessel. And as we learned last week, that's why when you study in Talmud any reason of something, the reason is there, but you can sense after you finish learning that it's above you. You haven't cracked the reason to its fullest. So the what in Torah we can know very clearly. The why in Torah we can't know so clearly. The Mishnah is concerned with the what of the law. The Talmud is concerned with the why of the law. And the why is probing into God's intelligence. Shouldn't be a wonder that we can, even if we can just skimp it on the outside, we can't really get it in the inside. And that's why. Okay, that's the ideas we're learning. What we're going to learn in this discourse now, number one, we're going to have a better understanding on the whole concept of why creation itself does not capture anything of God himself, and how creation is just a product of a disconnected ray of him. And I say disconnected, meaning to say, first God shuts himself down completely of being visible, removes himself from the visibility completely, and then he reintroduces a light that is possible for creation, which that light is already a quantum disconnect from him, a quantum leap. It's a whole different realm. And we're going to get, and therefore creation on its own, how meaningless creation is. That's what we're going to get a better understanding in. And that's why when God does come and reveal himself by the Torah, he's leaping. Behold, my beloved is leaping. The leap is because God leaps over an unbridgeable barrier. He leaps a boundless and absolute distance. He leaps into the nothingness from the true something. The nothing is how distant from the something, an infinite, boundless distance. And God makes a leap from himself into the nothingness to bring us the Torah. And that's why we can understand why the woman, which is Israel, exclaims with enormous joy, "Behold the voice of my beloved that has been muted since God created the world. We never heard his voice. We know he's there. I've been pining for him for thousands of years. And finally we're hearing him. He's coming. He's crossing that barrier." That's the awesomeness of the giving of the Torah. The Dalek. So that's one thing we're going to get a better understanding in. We're going to get a better understanding on how, when he leaps and does enter, the differences between the Mishnah, the Talmud, and the Braisa. We're going to get a better understanding. And then another interesting point we're going to see is how when we tune into the channel of God's beyond time of his Torah, where we're just tuning in and allowing him to speak, we're going to appreciate that it's not just we're tuning into what is, but we're actually causing a greater. It's not just we're tuning. When we tune into Torah, it's not just we are tuning into something that exists. The Torah is the Torah. God is flowing. God is with his queen all the time. He's at times, as we're going to explain, with the concubine. He's at times flirting, if you might say, with all the girls that are there. That kind of thing. He's there. And that's just the reality. And all we need to do is tune into it, and it's happening. It's happening to us. That's the way we understood it till now. Now we're going to see, no. When we're learning, we're actually making it happen. We're making the union between him and his queen. We're making the union. We're making the Mishnah be the Mishnah. We're making the Braisa be the Braisa. And we're making those young women be in the vicinity of the king. We're bringing the Mishnah and the Braisa to him. Without us, he's completely retracted from the vessels. He's not, because why is he coming? Why is he coming to begin with into this whole arena of worlds? Because he's madly in love with us. That's the whole thing. That's why it belongs in Shir HaShirim. This is the love song. Because of Israel, because of the Jewish souls, because of the dove, remember we said in the concluding of the verses, one is my dove, because my dove is there, and she's looking at me, and he says, just like doves look at each other, right? The dove is looking at me. And that looking, we might say, turning God on to want to come down into the world, we do that during prayer. Without prayer, there's no seduction on our end. And if there's no seduction on our end, he's not coming. And what's our seduction? Our seduction is that we're going crazy without him. We want, and that's in prayer. We reach a point where we can't bear the fact that we're stuck in this foolish existence of the cosmos. We want him. I just did a synopsis of the entire discourse. Whoever wants to go to sleep already, good night, go to sleep. And whoever wants to hang along for the long haul, stay in. Here we go. Beginning in Shir HaShirim, Daf Mem Beis, Likutei Torah. Now again, this is so beautiful because we are learning now, this week's Parsha, Mishpatim, is actually so fitting with Mishnah, Braisa, Gemara, because the entire Talmud is based on Parshas Mishpatim. So Parshas Yisro, we had the divine revelation of the giving of the Torah. Parshas Mishpatim, we have the actual laws. So much of Torah is in Mishpatim. Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra, Sanhedrin, what else? And certain parts of other tractates are all in Mishpatim. Okay. Inay, let's learn Inyan Medalig Elohim. What does it mean that he leaps over the mountains? The idea of him leaping over the mountains, yeah, is as follows. Huwal derech mashal, this is by way of analogy. Shahefrish ben hilach ledilug, the difference between walking and leaping. Shemishu hoylech said, this is an interesting point that we didn't see this in the discourse. What's the essence of a leap? He says, Shemishu hoylech kedarkoi, when a person is walking normally, when a person is just strolling, walking. And he's going to say soon, even when you're running. But if you're walking, what's the point? Your feet are touching the ground. The person's feet are always on the ground. Even at the time that he is walking. So again, if you're standing, obviously you have both feet on the ground. When you're walking, you pick up a foot. You pick up your leg. But when you're picking up your leg, you're only picking up one leg at a time. So there's always one leg on the ground. That's when you lift up only one foot. But a second leg is standing on the earth. And even when someone is racing and running, then you're moving your feet at a faster pace, but you still have one foot on the ground all the time. But nevertheless, one leg, either the right one or the left one, is always on the earth, and the second leg is in the air. But the leap is that a person suspends his entire body into the air. And both feet are lifted up from the ground at the same time. And what does that create? That creates a space, and a vacant space between the person and the ground. In other words, there is a disconnect completely from the person and the earth. The avir, an ear, bein raglov la'aretz, between his feet and the earth. Acha achakach, and only afterwards, I'm des raglov la'aretz. After you conclude the leap, when you land because of gravity, so you go back, now you're touching the earth. But there was a moment, maybe 3 seconds or whatever the leap, how long the leap took, or 2 seconds, where the person was completely disconnected from the earth. So this will be understood. Inyan medaleg, the idea of the leap. So first he's going to explain the leaping, not the leaping that God is leaping by the giving of the Torah, where he's transporting from above into the creation. First he's going to explain the leap as it applies to creation itself. Over there was also a leap. But over there, the main point of the leap is not him crossing the space, but the creation of the space. In creation, the concept that God disconnected, it's almost like it follows. Before creation, God was standing on the earth, means that in the space of the world, God was present. In what would later be the space of creation, God was fully present. The fact that he jumps up and pulls both feet away, if he would only lift one foot, would mean that he's keeping less of himself. He would be dimming his light. There would be less of himself on the earth in this space. The fact that he leaps with both legs means that he completely retracts himself from the space of creation. He takes himself out completely. There is nothing of him there. There is and thereby creating an empty space of nothingness. And then later he lands back in. What's the idea? That's not him. That's a little ray of him. A little love. That's the concept as it is in creation. In order that there should be the coming into being of the worlds. Abiyah is abbreviation for the four worlds, the sum totality of all of creation, and all of the world existence. Atzilus, which means the world of emanation. Bria, the world of creation. Yetzira, the world of formation. And Asiya, the world of completion. In order for these four worlds to come into being, from the infinite one, blessed is he. This was not possible through the evolution of cause and effect. The evolution of cause and effect would never, as we discussed at great length in the last three classes, primarily the first two classes called the 60 Other Queens, the worlds would never come into existence. Kima'ach, and he gives a simple proof to that. Kima'ach, Hashu Ein Soif, since God is infinite. Ech Yochel L'Savas Meza Olam. How can, if God would be extending who He is and what He is into the worlds, then they would have to reflect who He is, because there would be an extension of Him. And who is He? Infinite. So they would have to be infinite. And since the definition of worlds is parameters and definitions, which is the opposite of infinite, for that reason, must be that the infinite does not carry over into the world. But we know that the infinite is responsible for the world. But that means that He withholds the infinity of the infinite. He withholds. And what He does give is since the infinite, connects to what we're learning in the Mashiach daily classes. He withholds the infinite of the infinite, and He extends, being that He's infinite, He has to be able to project the finite light as well, or else He wouldn't be infinite. So what He is projecting is His ability to be finite, which is obviously barely a ray of His infinite, which is not, however, carrying over anything of the infinite of the infinite. See, when He looks at the ray, He can see the ray really as infinite, because it's to Him, the ray is what? Even the ray. To Him, the ray is one of His infinite capabilities, that he can even dim His light to the finite. But to the recipient, all we're getting is the finite. So by us tasting the finite, we're not tasting the infinite. He sees in that ray also the infinite, but from the recipient's end, we're only getting the finite. So again, since God is Ein Sof, He's boundless, how can a world come about? If He would flow into the world, even if we were to extend the infinite and kind of weaken it, but if we would weaken it with a progressive chain of weakening, slowly but surely weaken the infinite more and more and more and more, in its most dimmest form, it would still be infinite. Because it's infinite. That's its essence. Its substance is infinite. The infinity would never go away from it. So even if it would evolve and evolve and evolve and evolve, the last product would all be infinite. It would all have the taste and the flavor of the infinite. Because that's what if He would be shearing Himself like a chain-like progression. Because when a cause produces an effect, the effect has a relationship to the cause. What does that mean? It has a little piece of the cause inside of it. So if the worlds would be created in a way that they have a little piece of God inside of them, then they would also be infinite. But now that we see the worlds are not infinite, must be they don't have anything of it. Masha Enkin Oilamos, which isn't the case with the worlds, Lagabe Ein Sof Baruch Hu, to the Ein Sof, which they have no significance at all to Him. They're nothing to Him. Lachain, and therefore, so how are we going to get worlds? How are worlds going to be produced? The worlds are going to be produced by a first withdrawal of Himself completely. So whatever once was is completely not. And something utterly new is going to be introduced. And from there can come a boundless chain of worlds. But they're all going to share something in common. They're all going to be worlds with definitions. And therefore, for that reason, there needed to be a contraction. And an empty space. As explained in the beginning of the book of Eitz Chaim. And there I'll read. First, God contracted his light completely. What does that mean? Shenistalik, he departed. And the light became reabsorbed in its source. What does that mean? Bamor, in the luminary. There is a luminary that produces the light. The light was drawn back into the luminary, which means there shouldn't be, like imagine the sun suctioning up all of its rays, that none of the rays are leaving the sun. They all go back into the sun. And the worlds and the space, the atmosphere goes absolutely dark because the sun pulls everything, all its rays back into itself. That's what God did. He pulled all of his light back into himself. And what did that produce? An empty space, a void. And an empty space, a void. And afterwards, into the void, Nizgala was revealed, kav, a line, v'chut, and a thread. And what is this thread? And more than that, when God is reintroducing, very important, if he is reintroducing himself back in, then we're back to the same problem. Good, he pulled himself completely out, but in order to make something happen, he's got to invest. He's got to insert. So if he reinserts himself, even a tiny crumb of him, it's back infinite. So you didn't accomplish anything by pulling out. The answer is that when he reinserts, he's not reinserting of himself. He's reinserting a ray of his malchus. What's his malchus? Malchus means, as we discussed in the earlier class, kingship means relationship, which means his ability to be in a relationship with something, which means really his ability to be able to be finite. Because his ability to be able to be a king means to be in a king over something, which obviously must mean that there is a limitation in him. Because without the limitation in him, without the limitation of him, there couldn't be a king. The king calls something else into existence. So what he's saying is the light that comes after the Tzimtzum Arishon, the infinite light that's reintroduced, is not the Or Ein Sof that captures some of the substance of God. It's only, obviously, in the Or Ein Sof, you can't say Malchus. He's gonna mention that in a minute. There's no spheres there. There's no attributes. As we discussed in the Mashiach class that I'm giving daily, those short little clips. In this level, there's only pure infinite light. But infinity must have the power to be finite as well, or else it's not infinite. But the finite power that's now in the infinite, it too is infinite. It's lost in the infinite. It's just one infinity. And what the Tzimtzum, you know what the Tzimtzum did? The Tzimtzum did, it separated the infinite from the infinite, and it clarified and brought forth and made it distinguishable the finite ability of the infinite. That the finite ability of the infinite should stand out. And that's the Kav. And that's what we mean. It's coming from the Malchus. The Malchus is the potential that was in him even before the Tzimtzum. The potential in him to relate, to emanate in the finite. But that potential is still Malchus of Ein Sof. In Ein Sof, there's no Malchus. It's just Ein Sof. Who are you going to be a king over? Ein Sof means he's everywhere and everything. Can't be a king. But it means hypothetically, he could be a king if he wants to.
So that's the Malchus. But that Malchus wasn't pronounced. The Kav, the line and the thread that is now emanated, that's actualizing the Malchus. Actualizing the kingship. So, but what is this? This is Gvul. This is limited. If it's limited, it's only a ray of him. It's nothing of him. So what we're really saying is creation doesn't have anything of the Eberster. Nothing. Nothing. Zero. It has a ray of his Malchus. This all is an introduction. See, why do we have to be so philosophical? Why do we need to know all of this? It's important. Because only through this can we seek what's real. When we first dismiss all the stuff that we're usually excited about, and we're usually clamoring to get a little peace, we use all of our emotional and mental energy to increase our portion of life. We always want more. We want more experience. We want to read more, know more, if you're an intellectual. And you want to indulge more, if you're an indulgent being, in all the indulgences of existence. But when you really, it really clicks. And for those who think that when we learn this, it seems like, oh, we're saying this so many times. But the proof is it hasn't hit us yet, because if it would have hit us, we would have dropped everything a long time ago. The fact that we're still attached to everything, because we have any, this amazing thought the Alter Rebbe is trying to hammer home has still not hit us. We still didn't really get it. And this is what we need to practice a lifetime during prayer. To really, really internalize this idea. And then we lose all desire for worldly matters. And we become completely obsessed with only one being. Is that the truth of God's infinity should reveal itself in our soul. And that's what we're going to say. That happens when we study Torah. Okay. V'loy me'etzem again. V'ores akav. And the little bit of the ray. Who me'malchus the Oirin Tzoyf is only from the malchus of the Oirin Tzoyf Baruch. We're holding in the third chapter in the beginning. V'loy me'etzem Ein Tzoyf Baruch Hu. And not from the essence of the Ein Tzoyf. And he explains, the im hayu agilu matzmusa yisbarach, if there would be a revelation from the essence of him, if God would reinsert of his substance of who he is, hayu chayza l'kadmusa, we would be back, it would be a catch 22. We would be back into a reality of what of him. Belishum omen, there wouldn't be space for worlds anymore. V'zeu shekosav, and that's why it says, malchuscha malchus kol olamim. That all the olamos, all the worlds, what are they hinged on? What's their platform? What's their bedrock? What's their founding stone? Your kingship. But beyond your kingship is not a source for them. Quite on the contrary, beyond your kingship, if that level of God's truth would open up into the world's consciousness, it would obliterate all worlds. If we were to have eyes to see that, feel that, and to know that, we would not exist. Wouldn't be possible for any existence to exist other than God. Shemepchenes malchuscha, only from your kingship, hayehishavas kala olamos, came all almen, all worlds, ayedei kavachut, through a thread and through a line. Now he brings the inyan, he brings in parentheses. The inyan malchus de Oirin Tzoyf. What's the malchus of the Oirin Tzoyf? Ayin be'etz chayim, v'zel ushoinoi. Take a look at Eitz Chaim. Eitz Chaim is a quote from the Arizal. Shar Mem Aleph Perigimel. What does it say? Ikeilu nemar derech moshul. It's as if we would say, by way of analogy, shubchenas malchus shebe malchus. Va'afa pi she'enoi kei. It's like, it's as if we would say, in a way of analogy, the malchus of the malchus of the Ein Sof. Because you can't define Malchus, there's no spheres there. There's no demus and there's no sphera. There's no attribute. We're talking something that our ears can hear. We will speak so. So you see that we can that we're just using a term very, 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 very loosely and very vaguely to apply to the chitzonius of the Oirin Tzoyf. And this is what it says in the pasuk: Koil doidi, behold the voice of my beloved. Medalegi is leaping. So now we understand what the leaping is. What do we mean what the leaping is? Now, what does it mean by Torah, God leaped? Creation comes by God withholding everything. Torah is by God reconnecting and so when you're leaping, what are you leaping? You're passing through that space. That's the point of the leap. First, he leaped to create the space. Now he is leaping to pass through that space and introduce himself into. But where is he introducing himself? He's introducing himself into the vessels of creation. Which vessels? Into Chachma. But this is not Chachma of creation, this is the Chachma of Torah. But Hashem is introducing himself into the spheroids. First he brought the spheroids. The spheroids are a product of what? Of the Kav, of the little nothing of the light. But that's the Kav on its own. See, that's the whole point of, that's the Shechina on our own. The whole Kav is called Shechina. The whole, really all the spheroids, even Chachma is all part of Shechina. It's all part of the little dimmed light that creates the whole hierarchy of creation, the whole system of creation, the whole evolution of creation. It's all Shechina. What's the Indian of Matan Torah? God's marriage. L'shem yichud kutshabirichu shechinte. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is now coming into Shechina. What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what's beyond the Tzimtzum. He himself, the Orin Sof that's higher. But where is he going to? He's going into the vessels. He's going into the Kav and into the container. Through where? What's the meeting point? Chachma. And that's why Torah comes from Chachma, my Raisa. Into the Torah he reveals himself. Kihine, and Torah is saturated with who? The Torah is saturated with true, with God himself. This is what it says, behold, the voice of my beloved, he's leaping. Torah emerges from Chachma. But as explained in Chassidus, the Torah is not of Chachma, of wisdom. The Torah emerges into the reality of the worlds from wisdom. But what's really inside the Torah? The infinite beyond wisdom. The true existence of God is in the Torah. The Torah comes from Chachma. The Hizgalus and the revelation, the Hamshacha, and the drawing down me Oirein Soif from the Oirein Soif Baruch Hu Libchinas Chachma, and the drawing of the Oirein Soif from the Oirein Soif to transport himself into Chachma, Babchinas Dilug Dafka. That's taking a leap. Shaharei, why? Tzarechlias Mekoidem Chalol Amakam Panui. First, there is an empty space. And afterwards, only can come the Kav, which is where the Chachma is produced. This is a leap. Like a person leaping. First, there is a space and an empty space. And there is air between his feet and the earth. And afterwards, Yamdu Raglov al Oretz. And afterwards, he puts his feet on the ground, Masha enkein behiluch, which isn't the case in the walking. The kachul amayin, and so it is above. Sham shocha me ein soif baruch hu lechachma. When the ein soif baruch hu comes to chachma, nimshach, he has to leap over the empty space. Shaloi al yedei derech v'seder ishtal shalus. It's not through the manner of seder ishtal shalus of evolution. Because the meaning of Ishtalshalus, which means Ishtalshalus, means the chain-like evolution of worlds. Hukamoy shalsheles. That's like a shalsheles. What's a shalsheles? A chain. Asher tabaze achuz va'aduk bezeh belishum hefsik bintayim. Where one link of the chain is connected to the next link of the chain. Where there is no interruption. There's no space where there is no chain. One thing interloops into the next. Masha enken be his galus anal. Which isn't the case when the Orein Sof is now first producing Chachma, it has to hide completely. And then when the Orein Sof is vesting itself in Chachma, it has to jump over this empty space. It's not connecting like a loop. It's going from here, skipping over the place. And the coming of the worlds from the Ein Sof, the light needed to depart completely. And the light needed to be elevated upward. And then can come the revelation to Chachma, through the line and the thread. And this is the leap. However, this whole idea of the Ein Sof, the relationship of the Ein Sof to the world, which we explain, comes through a complete block, an ending of the Ein Sof, and then a quantum leap in order to create the worlds. That's between the Ein Sof and the worlds in general, including the highest world. Between the formation of the concept of worlds, even the highest worlds, is an absolute barrier. However, once we're dealing with worlds, even the sublime godly worlds, since they are worlds, which worlds means they have already context and they have definitions and they have parameters, from there is a whole chain-like progression of worlds where the other worlds stem from it through a chain-like progression. From there and downward, it's no more a quantum leap. It's an evolution. That's all within the Kav itself. As he says, V'chol zehu b'hamshach, and all of this is in the Hamshach, in the drawing, me'ein sof baruch hu, from the ein sof la'atzilus to atzilus. Avol kol hamshach is ba'olam es abiyah, but all of the hamshachis, which means, but all of the drawing down, once God introduced himself into atzilus, to come, and then the energy has to downgrade into the next world, into the olamos, into the worlds, Abiyah, Atzilus, Bri, Atzira, Afilum, Atzilus, Libiyah. Even taking the big leap, Atzilus, we know, is a divine world. Biyah, are three stages in the created realm. Biyah means creation. Bria means creation. Yetzira, the Yud of Biyah, stands for Yetzira. Yetzira means formation. And Asiya stands for action or completion, or the material world. So these are all levels in creation. So we would think that the divine world from the creation world is also infinitely apart and has to thereby be through a quantum leap. He says no. From here and onward, everything is already in a chain. Loi nikra b'chinas dilug. It's not called a leap. Kuhuderech hashtalshelus, because that's already by form of evolution. V'hagam, it's through like a chain like. In that Vagam Sheba Atzilus. And now he asks the question, how can you compare the three lower worlds to Atzilus? Vagam Sheba Atzilus. So in other words, how can Atzilus give birth to Bri, Atzir, and see in a way that the baby is like the mother? How can there be a continuation from Atzilus into creation? This is divine. Vagam Sheba Atzilus il v'chiyu v'garmiu chad, even though in Atzilus, he and his sefirot are one, the vessels of Atzilus, which are called both Oireis and Kalim. So the Oireis are called Chiyuhu. They're called the life. The Oireis, the lights of the Sefirot, are called Chiyuhu, their life forces. Garmu are called the vessels, the containers, which they are the, yeah. And in Atzilus, he's one with them. But in Abriya, he's not one with them. They're already separated because they live in separate consciousness. Hainu Atzmusai, the very essence of God, v'ho'or, and the light of Atzilus, v'hakelim, and the containers of Atzilus, hakol echad, he unifies and becomes one with them. And that's why Atzilus is divine. V'im kein eich yachol liyus mezeh, how can come from here, ishtalshelus olamos, a progression of worlds, through a chain-like progression, biyah, the three lower worlds, briya, yetzir, and asiya, shambale gvul, which they are limited. So he answers to that, Mekol Mokoyim, Bekelim, Da Atzilus, Gam Kin Shayach Bechinas Gavol. The Kelim of Atzilus, even though they unify with God, it is appropriate already to speak in them already that there's some element of limitation in them. They are the beginning of limitation. Even though we can't say they are limited, but they are related to limitation. It's already the source of limitation. Not the light of Atzilus. The light of Atzilus is still perfectly infinite, but the vessels of Atzilus, the containers, are already bipchinas shayech pchinas gavul. It's possible already the idea of gavul. Hey, wait. And since the light goes into these vessels, that means that is already shayches of the gavul already in the lights as well. So that's how he's going to connect, as we'll see. Elchein. Now this idea that Atzilus has already a relationship to finite, he has to prove that. So therefore, he proves it from the Kabbalistic idea, a very, very beautiful idea, that Shloishim Kelim Dizun, that the 30 vessels of Zun means male and female of Atzilus. Zun stands for Zuchra Nukva, male and female, which means the six emotions and Malchus, which are seven altogether. The six emotions are the male, and Malchus is female. So it says that the lower part of Atzilus has 10 sefirot. The Chabad, the Chochma Bin Adas, doesn't engage the three lower worlds. It's above. But the seven lower sefirot, do engage with the creation. How do they do so? So it says that they have 30 vessels. What kind of 30 vessels? The 30 vessels of Zuchra Nukva. Why 30? Because each in the Sefirot there is lights and there is vessels. But every vessel has the inside of the vessel, the middle of the vessel, and the outside of the vessel. So vessels could be seen on three levels. So you have to make already times three on each vessel. But then it's the vessels of seven spheroids. So seven times three is 21. How do you get 30? The answer is, the Ze'er Anpin, the six emotions, has its own Chabad. Meaning, the Ze'er Anpin is not just six emotions without an intellect. It has an intelligence. It's not the Chabad, what we call Chachma Vatzilus, Bina Vatzilus. They're a category onto their own. They're much higher. But in the Ze'er Anpin, which are the emotions, there is the intelligence of the emotions. Comes out that Ze'er Anpin has 9 Sefirot and Malchus is the 10th. If all of them have Kalim and all of them have 3, so 3 times 10... they're called the 30 vessels of Atzilus. So it says that the 30 vessels of Atzilus like this. The Kalim of Atzilus become the Neshama for Bria. Yetzira and Asiya. How does it work? The inside of the vessels of Atzilus, Of the 10 spheres of Atzilus, the inside, which means the highest level, the part of the vessel that's closest to the light, becomes the neshama to the world of Bria, to the 10 spheres of Bria. Becomes the light. In other words, Bria has a much lower level vessels. It's creation already. The vessels there are much thicker and much coarser. But in them flows a divine energy. The divine energy is not the same energy level that's in Atzilus. It's the vessels of Atzilus become the Or, become the Neshama in Bria. Follow? The middle vessels of Atzilus, the middle of the vessel, becomes the Neshama to the vessels of Yetzirah, to the 10 spheres of Yetzirah. And the external part of the vessels, of all the 10 vessels of Atzilus, become the Neshama of the spheres of Asiya. So what is he bringing from here, from the completion? We're seeing from here that there's a real investiture or an investment of the spheres of Atzilus, extend, the tail of them, so to speak, extend down literally into the three lower worlds. You have to say then that Atzilus is not absolutely and infinitely removed from the three lower worlds. Because if it would be of a complete different category, which has no relationship whatsoever than even a little, then it couldn't deliver anything of its substance into the next world. The fact that Atzilus does administer of itself to become the neshamas, the souls of the next world, to become the life force of the three lower worlds, means that there is a yachas, there is some kind of relationship between Bria, Yetzir, and Asiya, and Atzilus. So we have to say that Atzilus has, now how can that be? Bria, Yetzir, and Asiya is Gevul, is limit, and Atzilus is Beli Gevul. So you have to say that Atzilus has already a Shaykh, the Kalim of Atzilus, the vessels of Atzilus have already a Shaykhus, have already a relationship to Gevul, to limitation. But that's only from Atzilus and onward. Beyond Atzilus, Ein Sof. And therefore to go from the Ein Sof to Atzilus, that already is through a complete breakaway. There's nothing of the substance of the Or Ein Sof in Atzilus. That's the idea. So let's read it inside. And therefore, lechein shloishim kelim dezun, the 30 vessels of zuchra v'nukva melem filam mislapshim, they become enclosed bibiyah in the three lower worlds. Mamish v'nasim neshama lehem, and they become the neshama to the three lower worlds. Now, good. So you'll say that that's only the kelim. Maybe the oir of Atzilus is pure infinite light. But he says, and just like the neshama that becomes unified with the body, now let's take soul and body in the human experience. Our soul is so much loftier than our body. It's this is spirit and this is matter, and yet when we get an injury or a bang or a bruise on the toe. You bang your toe against something, you stub your toe, it hurts. Who's feeling the pain? The soul as well. The soul is feeling. You're feeling uncomfortable in your soul, not just in your body. It registers in your entire consciousness, including your soul. Why? Because they become one. So a commercial machiv beregel, and just like a pain in the leg, margeshes aneshama, the neshama feels, afsha guf gashmi, even though the body is physical. And the soul, the spiritual, kach esa spheres de biyah hem gufim. The 10 spheres of biyah, they are the body. The kalim, and they are the vessels, le kalim da atzilus, to the kalim of atzilus, shenasim neshama lahem, that becomes their neshama. So even though the vessels of atzilus are so much higher than the biyah, than the creation vessels, but the fact that they can become a neshama to them means there's already a relationship. Just like our neshama and our bodies are unified. And one impacts the other. But by God, we say, God is not the neshama of the four worlds. Because or else when we would stub our toe, he would hurt him. In a way that it really hurts him. It makes a difference in him. And we say, Ani Hashem lo shanisi, God is not affected by anything that happens. And that's because his relationship with the worlds is through a complete cutoff and a insertion of not him, a nothing of him that comes in. He's unlike the investment of soul and body. And just like the manner of the way the soul encloses itself in the body. Now he wants to show. Once we've established that what? That the relationship between Atzilus and the three lower worlds is like a soul and a body. Because the vessels of Atzilus, the 30 vessels of Atzilus, become the soul of the three lower worlds. Now, so then we can say, now how does that happen? That comes in a chain-like progression. What does that mean? We said earlier, the higher vessels go into Bria, the lower vessels go into Yetzirah, and the lowest vessels go. That means there's less of Atzilus in Yetzirah than there is in Bria. There's less of Yetzirah, there's less of Atzilus in Asiya, in the world of completion, than there is in the world of formation. So it's with gradations. And that's exactly what Hishtalshalus means. Hishtalshalus means a chain-like, it's descending slowly from level to level. It's evolving, becoming... It's relating to each level stage by stage. It's not uniform everywhere the same. As opposed to the Or Ein Sof is equal everywhere. Because nothing is closer to it, nothing is farther than it, it's beyond the whole everything. And just like the manner in which the neshama enclosed itself in the body, is in the way of chain-like progression, just like we see physically in the body. That what? That when our soul goes into our body, in our head, there is more soul than in our body. That means the powers of the soul are able to open up more in the brain. The more higher energies of the soul, the deeper powers of the soul can open up in the brain, but they can't open up in the feet. The feet don't have the sophistication of vessel to be able to manifest the higher levels of the soul. The hands of a person can function and can do activities that are more delicate and more inward. Your hands are able to do, you're able to write thing with your feet, you can't. You fight, the motor skills of the hands are far more fine. Why? Because the hands are closer to the head. They're a more refined element in the body. And therefore, higher and deeper powers of the soul can manifest in the hands than could in the legs. And then finally the feet. And that's the manner in which Hashem invests itself. Lamed kelim d'atzilus b'biyad. The 30 vessels of Atzilus become invested in the three lower worlds: Bria, creation, Yetzira, formation, and Asiyah. In the world of Bria, shines a higher level. Bria is called the brain of creation. Everything in the physical, our physical body, is a reflection of all three worlds. So if you look at a human being, you see the three primary sections, even in the physical body. From the feet and downward is one section. The torso, which includes the hand, the heart, is the midsection. And then the head is its own unit. So too, the world of Bria is the cosmic head of creation. The world of Yetzira is the cosmic torso of creation. And the world of Asiyah are the feet of creation. And just like in the human body, these three sections are divided not only from the body's sake, but also from the powers of the soul. So to the lights of Atzilus, the divinity of Atzilus, manifesting in the next three worlds, which are is the soul, will be an equivalent to the vessel. Vagam, and even Shetzorich. But now he's saying Vagam Shetzorich is parsim of sekes bein Atzilus l'Bria. Now we seem to have been implying that what? That from Atzilus to Bria, from the world of Atzilus to the world of creation, the world of emanation to the world of creation, flows, like evolves very directly. But we do know what it says in Kabbalah, that between Atzilus and Bria there is a partition, which seems to imply the same idea that there is between the Ein Sof and the creation, a breakaway. Because it says there is a parsa. It's not that it contracts, it dims itself. Dimming of the light is not enough. There has to be a partition, a great wall, a barrier. So it would seem to imply that there is a barrier. How come we're saying that it's not? From Atzilus and onward is evolution. So he explains, Vagam Shatzarach is parsa mafsekes bein Atzilus l'Bria. Even though there needs to be a parsa that separates between the world of emanation to Bria, afapikain, nevertheless, you can't compare that to the first tzimtzum. Legabeyat tzimtzum umakam panui, you can't compare that to the contraction of makam panui and the empty space shebein ein sof baruch hu la'atzilus. It's incomparable to the space that exists between the ein sof and atzilus and the world of emanation. Shua nikra dilug, which is called a leap. Ein aparsa nikra b'shem dilug klal. The parsa is not called a leap at all. Rak p'chinas ishtalshalos. Compared to that, the parsa, even though there is a parsa there, which creates a bigger interruption, but it's still considered evolution. Sha parsa, and he explains, the parsa k'moy oira meir derech ha-masach. Parsa, which is the partition, is similar to light that shines through a curtain. Next week's parsha, we're going to learn Truma. We're going to start learning about the building of the tabernacle. We're going to learn about many curtains. And the point of these curtains were similar to the parsa that there is between the worlds, these partitions. So when you have a very, very strong light source and you put a curtain, if you have a light open in a bathroom, a strong light, and you don't have a door, but you just have a curtain, and you have a room, there will be some light coming through. Because even though there's a curtain, light goes through the curtains. What? Huh? It's going through this curtain, yeah. There's a curtain right over here, yeah. For those who don't see, I have a light ahead of me, top of me, which has a curtain. And the light is coming through it. Even though it is a... So it weakens it, but it's still the same light. It's not a new light. The light on the other side of the curtain is the same light. It's weaker. And if it's depending on the thickness of the curtain, it could be a very... But some light is coming through. Between Atzilus and Ein Sof doesn't say there's a parsa. Over there, there was complete tzimtzum, and Hashem removed the light completely. There is nothing. There was a no and then a yeah. Here, it's just a reduction. It's always a continuation from what was. Question is, how much continuation? Gradations. But still a continuation. You never came to a point where there was a no light. That's not. And then he gives a more elegant example. A light with a curtain, that's one. Light still comes through. Another example is when a teacher has an idea and shares the idea through a metaphor. So the metaphor is considered... So it's like this. Let's, you know, when a teacher has a student, not always do you need to use a metaphor. But a teacher always has to bring the ideas down. You always have to do that. You always have to dilute it. That, yeah. But if the students are sort of on par with the teacher, it's enough just bringing it down. Then there are times when the students are so far from the mind of the teacher has to create a metaphor. He has to package it in a metaphor. A metaphor is already a block. Because so far, suddenly you're not talking anymore to the sugya. You're not talking anymore to the concept. You're speaking about something else completely. So it's a block. But it's a block that through that block, the light will come through. It will be a much dimmer light, but you'll get it. Without that, without putting it through the curtain, it would be too bright. It would blind the student. So the student needs to receive it through a metaphor. But the metaphor is illuminated with the light. The metaphor doesn't cut off the light completely. And then after you understand it through the metaphor, you're understanding the very idea the teacher said. A student that understands it through a metaphor will get, in the beginning, the metaphor will be very, very, very blocking. But after a long time, and they sit with the metaphor, and they squeeze the metaphor out until they really get the idea, they can even reach a point that they discard the metaphor as if the metaphor was never there, and they're experiencing the very light that the teacher had. So you see, it's the same light, it's just weakened. That's the idea. And just like the seichel, the idea goes into a garment of a metaphor, even though it's a concealment, nevertheless, or it wasn't a departure of the entire light, on the contrary, the essence of the light continues to shine through the partition. The light goes through the partition. He brought two examples. And the essence of the idea, mislabish bahamoshel, becomes enclosed in the analogy, in the metaphor. There's something there to darken it, to dim it. Umasach, and a partition, a screen, so that the recipient can receive. However, from the Ein Sof, the emanator to Atzilus, there first needed to be a complete retraction of all the light into its source. There had to be a removal completely from the light without having even any trace of the original light left over. And that which is then revealed afterwards, Raka Ora, is only a ray, Derechkav, only through this line, as we spoke earlier, this thin thread, V'zeu Anikra Dilug, and this is called a leap, V'nikra Lamayla Meseder Ishtalshalos. It means above the order of evolution. It's not following an evolution from cause to effect. where one thing is evolves into the next. Okay, so this is chapter one in the discourse. And now we're going to learn chapter two. So chapter one is, there are three chapters in the discourse. And now we're starting chapter two. Now from Atzilus and onward is called, he fills all worlds. That means when we say that God fills all worlds, filling the worlds means that God adapts himself to each world and to each place that he's in, like water that fills a cup. The filling of a cup means you can only put as much water in the cup in accordance to the capacity of the cup. So when we speak and we say in the Zohar that God fills all of creation, that is the godliness of this thread. It's the godliness of Atzilus and onward. That is already the 30 vessels that we spoke about. That is measured, it is contained, it is enclosed, it is, and that light is affected. Like we said before, a soul gets affected by the body. That light does get affected. That's why we say that the Shekhinah has pain from the various different things. It does affect. But on the other hand, we say God has said, I'm not affected. And the answer is, it depends what we're talking about. If we're talking about the little tiny ray of God that it does get invested in the world, yeah, that gets impacted and changes, and so that's Mamala Kalam. But then there is the Soviv Kalam and God's essential light that is above all worlds. It's everywhere and it's above all worlds. That is not limited by the worlds in which it is in, because it's everywhere. It's everywhere not because the worlds have it, but because it's nowhere that it's not. And therefore it's in the worlds as well, because there's no place devoid of him. But he's not in any way conditioned to the worlds where he finds himself in. He is still as limitless as he is. And that light is not impacted by anything in creation. It's not contained in it. It's not, and we call that encompassing all worlds. When we say encompassing all worlds, it encompasses all worlds absolutely equally. No one can behold him, even the highest, most refined spiritual existence. And no one is too low for him to know inside out. Nothing is too high to grasp him, and nothing is too low for him to grasp. He is grasping everything. Nothing is grasping him, but he's grasping everything equally. And he's later going to say, that light is hidden from us. But when that light will turn on, it will turn on everywhere equally. And therefore, you don't have to be sophisticated to experience that truth of God. When that light will turn on, even a stone will know him. And that's the secret, that our bodies will not have to eat food when Mashiach comes, by the time of the resurrection. Because finally, by the time of the resurrection, that level of God, so to speak, God himself will move into the world. Move into the world meaning move into our space that we can experience it. And dead things will come alive. And even the physical thing can live directly off God without needing food, not needing any. Because the entire scope of divine interaction until Mashiach comes is all only with the interactive light, the limited light. That's all of our godly experiences. It's all within the measured light. And we work to become more spiritual, more refined, so we can experience more light. But we don't even begin to scratch the essence or touch the essence. Now we are doing it now through Torah and mitzvot. We're channeling and pumping the essence, but we have no clue that. It's still hidden from our experience, although we're attaching it to ourselves. But the coming of Mashiach will open up those lights. Fascinating piece, chapter number two. From Atzilus and below, Nikra B'Shem Emalek Olam, and that's called the filling of all worlds. The Derech Hishtalshelus, and the way of chain-like progression. And the reason, and now he's going to explain why it's called Memale, why he fills, because he explains. Ki b'chines kelim, the Malchus and b'chines biyah. Because the vessels of Malchus, they are the soul, as we spoke earlier, of the three lower worlds. Remember we said that the vessels of the spheres become the... I made a mistake earlier. I was saying that the 30 vessels are the vessels of the male and female. Really, and we said there's 10 because there's a Chabad there as well. It's because the term he used earlier was the kalim of the zun of Zuchra Nukva become the neshama of. But really, if you break it, that wasn't a mistake, but if you break it down more specifically, the real vesture into the three lower worlds is only Malchus, only Shekhinah. Malchus is called Shekhinah. Only the Malchus of Atzilus goes down into the three lower worlds. However, the Malchus of Atzilus itself doesn't have, Malchus is the moon, she doesn't have anything of her own. So it's the input of the masculine spheres that he delivers into Malchus, giving her her content, then her vessels transit. She has 10 vessels because she has 10 spheres in Malchus. So the 10 spheres of Malchus have, and the 10 spheres of Malchus have the external vessel, the middle vessel, and the internal vessel. They become the neshama of the three lower. However, although it's only the Malchus, the since Atzilus in general is part of the Mamala Kalalman, the whole Atzilus, but isn't it only Malchus? No, because the six or ten spheres all flow into Malchus. How does Malchus have Chesed? The Malchus of Chesed, the way it works is like he's going to explain it less fellows. Every Sephira of Atzilus is a composite of all the other Sephirot. So Chesed, for instance, kindness, has Chabad, which is Chachma bin Adas, wisdom, as in intelligence. Then there is the Chesed of the Chesed, the Gevura of the Chesed, and finally, in Chesed, there is the Malchus of the Chesed, which would mean the words of kindness. There's kindness, there is the words of the kindness. Malchus is always communication. The communication of the kindness. That's the Malchus of the Chesed. The same is also Gevura. Gevura has 10 spheros. The Malchus of the Gevura is the communication of the discipline. Fine. So the way it works is as follows. The Malchus of each sphera, of each attribute, of the masculine attributes, When they are transmitted to the attribute of Malchus, they build up the Malchus. So that means like this. How does Malchus receive kindness? From the Malchus of Chesed, it becomes the Chesed of Malchus. It becomes the Chesed in the female attribute. The Malchus of Chesed, When the Chesed transmits to his wife, to the Shekhinah, his Malchus of his Chesed, it becomes by her the Chesed Shebe Malchus. When the Gevura transmits to Malchus the Malchus Shebe Gevura, it becomes in Malchus the Gevura Shebe Malchus, the Gevura element of Malchus. And so it is in all 10 spheres. Now, the vessels of all these spheres of Malchus that were produced with the energies of the highest spheres now descend into the three lower worlds. And that's why we say that Atzilus, the whole Atzilus, is called Mamale Kalalman, fills all worlds. Because something of Atzilus descends lower and descends lower. And in each world contracts to accordance to that world. The Atzilus energy is transmitted down, the energy from the world of emanation is transmitted downward into the world of creation, the world of formation, and the world of completion. Each one in accordance to its capacity. And the way of Ishtal Shulus, why? Kibchenas kelim the Malchus, because the vessels of Malchus. Kibchenas kelim the Malchus, because the vessels of Malchus. Hemchinas biyah. This is the bria tzir nasiya. Ubchinas malchus and malchus mekabelas mekol eses spheres. And malchus receives from all the ten spheres the atzilus of atzilus. Ki yedua as it is known. She mebchinas malchus the chesed. From the malchut element of kindness, the atzilus of the world of emanation, nase that becomes chesed, the kindness, the malchut of kingship, the atzilus of the world of atzilus. Umesfiras malchus de gevura, and from the attribute of malchut of the gevura, the atzilus of the world of emanation, nase that becomes gevura, the malchus, the gevura element of the malchut of atzilus. So therefore, what does that mean? That the entire Atzilus is translated into Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiyah via the Malchus. Obviously, it's a very distilled energy, but it's still the energy of Atzilus. And therefore, we can say that Atzilus is Memale, fills. L'chein shayach loyme b'chlal Memale kol almin. That's why you can say on general, on the entire world of Atzilus, that it's memale, it fills all worlds. Hagam she'olam ois b'yahem ba'alei gvul, even though the three lower worlds are real creation, and therefore they're really limited. Yesh b'chlal masayim maneh. Yet, in 200, there is 100. What does that mean? The sages say that 200 includes 100. What that means is that in Atzilus, it has within it already the seeds of the 100, which means the lower worlds, which are much less, they are there already in potential that it could be produced from it. And they can evolve from it. Uprinas memala kalalmin v'ishtal shalos. And the way memala kalalmin works, and the way the indwelling light of God works, v'ishtalshulus, and the chain-like progression, who derech ilava olul, is a way by cause and effect. Kvan is bar shakomokum, and when we explained earlier, shemakomokum yesh parsim of sekas. Of course, it's not a very direct evolution because it does go through a screen, like we spoke, a curtain, like we discussed earlier. But even in a curtain, the light comes through. That's important, right? And a radiance and a shine of the light of the kingship of Atzilus of the world of emanation illuminates and vivifies and enlivens every world. Every world has a little droplet of Malchus. Malchus is the mother of all worlds. And the way it works is that in each world, in accordance to its capacity. That's the whole power of Malchus. It relates to everybody in accordance to its own way. V'yesh a'or, and there is an illumination, v'hislapshus, and an enclosement, b'chol oylam, in every world. L'fi erech ha'makabel, it all works in accordance to the capacity of the recipient, derech ilov v'olol, in the means of cause and effect. K'moy derech mashal, and as it is in the human experience, he's going to give an example of where one thing produces the next thing in the human psyche. Like we find, from the intelligence comes the emotions. And as we discussed in earlier classes, part of the intelligence lends itself into the emotions, flows into the emotions. They're not two separate worlds existing in two separate realms. It's the intelligence itself, since it produces the emotion, it doesn't only produce it. As we know, that based on what we know, that's what we get excited about. But there is some of the intelligence itself in the emotion. The emotion has an intelligence. That's why when the intelligence dries up, for whatever reason, the emotion will suddenly will collapse. An emotion, when you forgot the reason for the emotion, can sometimes completely just go dead. Because it needs a battery. What's the battery of the emotion? The reason, the logic behind it, the understanding. That's why a lot of times when we understood something wrong, we get upset about something. We're very angry. Suddenly we found out that the whole thing was a total misconception. We literally did not understand what the person said. We read, Imagine you have the same sentence in Spanish and in English. And the person was speaking Spanish, but we thought they spoke in English. And in Spanish, it's a curse. We got all worked up and we got angry. And then we found out that he was speaking English. The guy doesn't even know Spanish. And they were telling us the nicest thing. So even though you're all angry, imagine, but it was based on a logic that you got upset based on your understanding. And then now the understanding is different. It diffuses the whole emotion. So what does that mean? That there is some of the intelligence in the emotion. Because put it this way, if the emotion would be independent from the logic that created it, it should take a little while for the emotion to like die out. It should maybe take a week or so because the emotion was produced on its own. So now what do you mean? Now I'm angry. I'm angry because of this thing. I'm all upset. But what do you see? No, the vivifying energy, the nucleus of the emotion is the idea behind it. Pluck the idea, the emotion is gone. So you see how it's like a chain. One thing is in the other. And the reasoning and the intellect is enclosed in the emotions. And then from the emotions it goes into thought. And emotions go into the thought. It's not only based on my emotion, that's what I think. The emotion is oozing into the thought. The emotion, the very emotion itself is flowing in. The thoughts are pumping with the emotion. The tail end of the emotion is going into the thought that's thinking. And from the thought comes the speech. So speech is not only following a person's thought. The words of speech themselves have some of the thought inside of it. The lower part of the thought is in the words. It's contained in it. It becomes the soul of the words. And then a maisa and action. Vegamba maisa ksav. And now he's going to take the biggest leap, but still a chain. You can write a concept, an idea, a logic down on a paper. So you're doing an action, literally a physical action, and in there is enclosed an idea. So the intellect is making its way all the way down onto the pen on paper. Nizgala HaSeichel has revealed the concept. The Koisven Dvar Seichel B'Ksav, and you can write a Dvar Seichel, you can write a concept in writing. Vimkein HaSeichel Atzmoi comes out that the intellect itself, Nishtalshel, the mind itself, Nishtalshel, has evolved itself, through a couple of stages. And it finally comes down into a writing. Atzen Nishtalshel V'Nislapshel Etzem HaSeichel, till something of the substance of the idea became enclosed all the way B'Maisa in the action, HaKsav, of the writing, Nizgala HaSeichel, and over there is revealed the concept. Nimtza comes out, Yesh Erech Lasiya Gashmi Yeshol Maisa Ksav Im HaSeichel Aruchni. That means that writing, the action, has some relationship and some value to the distant mind, the distant intelligence. You cannot say has no relationship, is absolutely removed from action, from the world of action, because you see that the intellect can descend into the action and actually does so all the time. Which means that the world of action and the world of intelligence are connected. And definitely if we're only dropping down from intellect to emotion, over here, they're very close neighbors. You know, when you're going from intellect to action, you're going from a very high floor, a high story in the building, you're going all the way down into the basement or to the first floor. But when you're going from intellect to emotions, you're going from the 20th floor down to the 18th floor. You're going pretty close by the emotions, you see that they are very governed by the mind. That's why you see minors, children that have a silly mind will have silly emotions. Their emotions will also be in little things, in minor things. Kach ba'olamos, and so the same is also in the worlds. Now that's used as an analogy to understand the worlds. The lights of Atzilus, primarily of Malchus of Atzilus, that contains within itself the light of all the higher spheres, shines in all three worlds, lifi erkoi, according to its capacity, umachaya mahava oisam, and enlivens them each one. Bebriya meir yosef begilui, in the world of Bria, it's shining more revealed, more, in a more revealed way. Adasiya, until it comes to the world of completion, sham the samtsim or over there, the light becomes more contracted. Based on all of this, this is called Mamalik Alalman. Based on this, you have all the changes that take place in worlds in terms of their blessing, in terms of the goodness and better days and bad days, more godly flow, less godly flow, and you can, first of all, the difference that there is in the worlds that we discussed earlier. Places of greater divine presence, places of lesser divine presence. But there's also, you see within our world itself, times of a lot of blessing and times of darkness. Like we're going to see, the time of the temple stood, the worlds were on a much godlier state. We're blessed with enormous blessing. During the time of exile, there's a lot of hardship, pain, and suffering. Like it's called the Dark Ages. The very dark time. Why is that? Because godliness is minuscule and reduced during the time of exile. Why? What's the difference? God is the same. God doesn't change. The ray that dims, that opens up in accordance to each world, in accordance to its capacity, that ray is adjustable. More ray, less ray, all of that. And that depends. So it goes up and down, and that's where you have the adjustments taking place. As he says, Machmazam, because of this, there can be changes in the world. First of all, a very basic change. Summer and winter. So winter is barren. Summer is full of life, just physically. Walk outside, spring is full of life. All the trees are growing, there's greenery, there's everything is out. Winter is cold and barren. It's almost like a withdrawal. It's almost like God is like the whole world is in hibernation. And it's like God is also sleeping. The soul of creation went to sleep. Everything is silent. But everything is being prepared for the great new growth that's going to grow. But still, it's a silence. It's a withdrawal. And but then there is, in terms of the overall existence of history, there is binyan abayis, there is the building of the house, meaning when the temple stood, when there was a lot of divine revelation in this world, and then there was, God forbid, churbanai, there was the time of the destruction of the temples, and the millennium, the two millennium of darkness that we've been through. But then finally will come the third millennium, or the seventh millennium, or the time of Geula that we're already any second, the Yamos HaMashiach, the days of Mashiach, where the world, where there was some, he's not talking yet about Tchias HaMesim. Because Tchias HaMesim, the resurrection of the dead, that's already not part of the fluctuation. That's when God just appears, himself, not his light. When he says Yamos HaMashiach, he means Mashiach as it's relating to the Kav, to the Mamalik Alamon light. The beginning of the days of Mashiach. More light, more revelation. Kolzeh, all these fluctuations, humach mashiraka ora, because it's only a ray shameir b'chol oylam, which illuminates and shines in every world, umachaya oysam, and enlivens them b'pchenes memale, in a filling manner. The imkain, and it's understood, memela einagili b'shava b'chol oylam ois. It's not the same in all worlds. Every place is different. Betzimtzum, in every world it's contracted. B'chol olam, in every betzimtzum with a contraction. B'chol olam, in every world lifi erko, according to its value, according to its capacity. Kochan is galav b'chinas mamali. That's how the mamali light reveals itself. Ulebavir zem, because of this yashinuyim, there is differences lifi erach agiloi, in accordance to the level of revelation. Achim b'chinas soiviv kolalmin, but however, once we tap the Soviv light from the perspective of the infinite godliness or God himself, that is above and beyond all of creation, that is not part of this ray, is just God's very self, to that, all of existence is absolutely not zero. No one can know him, no one can experience him, no one is worthy for that revelation. But yet, if he chooses to reveal himself, he can do it everywhere, because refinement is not a condition for him. That's the point. Since he's not within the context of worlds, refinement, meaning being more sophisticated and more refined and being more, isn't getting you any closer to him. After God makes a quantum leap and enters into creation, from within the parameters of creation, there's kind of this whole idea that the more refined you are, the more pure, you know, then you can say you're getting closer to the light, further than the light. But God is beyond light. We have no idea what he is. And when he chooses to reveal himself through all the mitzvot that we've done and the Torah that we learn, which we're going to learn about later in the discourse, but when it will happen, it will be uniform everywhere. As he says, Achim chenesoviv kalam and the soviv kalam and shehu. He has very important words. Etzema or it's not the ray of the light; it's the light itself. It's the essence of the light. Harei legabe atzmusa yemohusay. When it comes to God Himself, ani avay lo shenisi. I God have not changed. My lamata up and down shoven are equal. Gashmius veruchnius. The material and the spiritual are all the same. And here's the thing. To God himself, this entire existence that comes from his blocked light, that can only be born out of his blocked light. So you understand that from him himself, he's not a part of the block. Everything else is after the block. He's not part of the block. So to him, the worlds can't even exist. So what does it mean they don't exist? They exist, but they're him. And if they're him, they're infinite and boundless. They're not what we see in everything. So it's amazing. A little silly example to this, which I'm thinking now. I don't even know if this is like the appropriate thought over here, but it came to me now, so I think it's really cool. And maybe it is, but it's not like the him, it's all not. It's all nothing. The worlds are nothing. So it never happened? No. Well, I'm not saying it never happened. It never happened in the manner in which it happened to us. He willed it in his infinite light, but the context of everything from his perspective as he willed it, there's no finite. But what does that mean? There's no heaven and earth, there's no table and chair, there's no tree, and the tree is very finite. One thing can mean two things to two different beings. There can be little marks of chalk on the sidewalk that are made by the DWP, and there are signs, and they mean whatever they mean. To the onlooker who walks by it, it's a little graffiti on the floor, it's nothing. But so our reality of our finite existence and all of our worlds, as it's perceived in our realm, is worlds. From him, it's all part of the Ein Sof. and has infinite content. But that's not our reality, that's his reality. That's the worlds as they are submerged in him, part of him, and in his infinity. A simple way of understanding it is that the tree is, it's not like there's no tree. What's the tree? To him, the tree is his infinite potential to be a tree. And that infinite potential is lost in, is one with the infinite potential of everything else. So all there is just infinite. There is no tree. But there is a tree. Because in his infinite potential is an infinite potential for a tree. So we see the tree. As the worlds are inside of him, they're all him. And therefore, that everything that's taking place in the tree from the perspective of the tree, he knows it inside out, as we're going to say soon, because he knows all of existence inside out, but it's not impacting him in any way. Because the world as we experience ourselves and as we know ourselves, with the parameters and definitions as we know ourselves, he's completely outside of that. Completely. And yet at the same time, he includes it all, and it exists only because of his will, and yet it doesn't trap him in any way. And these are very, very, you know, they hurt almost the head when we think about them, because our minds know that we're not getting it, because we think in certain terms. We know things the way we know things, and the way we know things, we become excited by what we know. We become impacted by what we know. It influences us. And when things change, we change in accordance to the things we know that changed. And by him, it's almost painful to think, like to go there. But on the other hand, we get a sense of it. So let's read inside. Ochein, b'chein ha-seiv ha-kalam, and the seiv ha-kalam, shu etzema, which is the essence of the light, and the gabi etzmusei, musei, so to him himself, ani avai loishen, he say, I have not changed. As we said, up and down is equal to him. Oh, that's what we said. Physical and spiritual are equal, like before the world was created. Ekamoy derech moshel ziv Hashem ha-shemeir. Now, this idea that all the changes are happening in the light, but not in the ray of the light, but not in the essence of the light, would be like he's giving an example of the ray of a sun. You can have clouds, and the clouds, for example, can be covering up the rays of the sun. But when the clouds are covering the rays of the sun, it's a gloomy day. Clouds are not there. It's not a gloomy day. It's a bright day. But all of that has no influence on the sun itself. The sun remains the same. One of the beautiful things to go when it's really raining and raining and raining, and you're just getting a little bit overly, you know, down because you want to see the blue sky. But one of the nice things of taking a flight during a rainy season is you break through the clouds and you see nothing changed. A little higher, nothing changed. Everything is blue and there's no storm. It's above it all. Avo makolza ein shum shina be'etzem ha-shemesh. There is no change in the essence of the sun. Kamoy kein, the same is also legabe etzem or ein sof, to the essence of the ein sof. Asher es ha-shamayim va'oretz ani molei, in which God himself says, I fill heaven and earth. Ein shum shinu ve'hester. There is no change. Kechashecha ka'oiro. Darkness is the same like light. Kalocha shiva kamei. And all is not before him. It's only after he conceals and removes the light of his essence. And only a ray which is our ray, if you can call it. Umeir aziv derech dilug, and this ray comes about after a quantum leap. V'chol olamah kampana, and after the chasm, and after the disconnect, and after the space. Ashayich shinuyim, that's where there is changes. All the ups and downs, and all the, in other words, all the changes that are taking place in our reality, brighter times, darker times, all this is all within the world as we perceive it within the finite experience, which is all as God has introduced himself into our opinion through a light that he kind of broke off from himself to be separate from him and to be the powerhouse of our realm, which we called earlier the Mamala Kalam. But the Soviv Kalaman, the encompassing light over there, there is no change, it's constant, all of existence is not before him. The lowest and the highest elements of the worlds in general don't exist as they are. Avala asid lavoi, but in the future. Now, when is going to come a time that light remains always hidden from us? But kishayih is galus or in the future, when the light itself, the essence of the light will be revealed. And from the encompassing light, what's going to happen? Everything will spring to life with an infinite life. When we will start tapping and living off this life, we will also be infinite. In the sense that we will live forever. And the physical body will be able to tap directly into God, unlike now, where our soul taps into God and our bodies receive life through the soul, enlivening the body via what? Via the food that we eat. And that's how the soul connects to the body and the soul gives life to the body. But when Mashiach will come, the physicality itself will plug into God's essence. Plugging into it means he will be able to, will be powered by it. So then, yakum gam gufa gashmi, so also the physical body will get up. This is the secret of resurrection. B'tchias ha-meisim, by the resurrection of the dead. V'le'honos meziv ha-shechina, to enjoy the radiance of the Shechina. When we say over here Shechina, what do we mean? Not the Shechina that we always talk about. Maybe the radiance of the Shechina, but the Shechina when she's married already to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Shechina have become one, then the rays of the Shechina that are flowing into the body. But it's the Soviet. The Lichyos and the body will live below Yachila Vishtiya without food or drink. Ki bifnei etzema or, because in front of the essence of the light, ain't shum hester klal. Now I can say, how can a dark thing like the body, how can a dark, dense entity like a physical creature live off the light? The answer is, live off godliness. The answer is, this is not godliness, this is God himself. And therefore, he has no limitations at all. And he can reveal himself to whatever he wants. And it's not even a wonder, that's the point. It's not like, ooh, also the physical body. It's not. Because who else thinks that, like, no one is any closer. From the beginning of existence, Atzilus isn't any closer. Chachma and Atzilus, and the way I heard it from a person teaching in Levi Yitzchak, this wasn't my own line, but a Yid was teaching in Levi in the other day in Shul, and he said, Chachma Vatzilus and a garbage truck are exactly the same. In front of the Or Ein Sof. That's the idea, isn't it? This is garbage. And this is Chachma Vatzilus. Yeah, but we're talking about outside of it all. And if it's revealed, everything. Because of this, and precisely because of this, now we go back to another point that we discussed in the earlier discourse. We didn't touch upon it this week yet. I did, but for the very reason of his transcendence, he knows everything that's going on everywhere, and nothing is too small and too insignificant for him to be busy with, because nothing is important. And he knows everything because it's all swallowed inside of him. And he knows it from every angle without getting excited about anything that he knows. So it's, he's infinitely above it and then infinitesimally in everything. He can oversee the details of the details. From God comes all of man's footsteps. It means there is nowhere that we go or come that's outside of his jurisdiction, outside of his awareness while we're doing it, as we're doing it. It's all there. Ve'ena, and the sages also say, ve'ein oidem noikef etzboi, you don't stub your toe unless it was with the will of God Almighty. There the Talmud says, without it being announced above. He's explaining over here, the ultimate above, above can mean in the higher worlds. That may be also, but here we're talking much higher than that. And then, as it says in the book of Daniel, Yoda ma b'chashoicha, he knows what's in the darkness, v'nohoira imeshrei, and light is with him, dwells with him. Kilifnei atzmusa, because we're front of his essence, my lamata, up and down, shavin are equal, haka kalach shiva kameh, all before him is not. V'zehu, and this is the meaning of which we say, tomorrow we're going to say it in Hallel, we're going to sing Hallel. Come to Mayan tomorrow, 7:15 in the morning. We're going to be singing joyfully the Hallel, the praise that we say on Rosh Chodesh. So we say over there, V'zehu ha-magbil l'shaves, who is like God, our God, who sits so high? Hamashpili lirois, who therefore can lower himself down to see, to observe, b'shamayim ba'aretz, in heaven and in earth. In Psalm number 113. It seems to connect the two. Why is he able to go down, 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 down? Because he's high, high, high. Because he's Magbil Shavas, because he sits not, here's the thing. Does God sit in the highest perch of creation, or does God sit utterly above creation? That's the idea. If he would be sitting on the highest perch of creation, then we would say that, you know, he's more likely to observe what's going on closer to him. Maybe from time to time, he'll also take a look a little bit what's further. Yeah, but it's a real schlep for him to go out and to look all the way down, 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 down at the bottom. So he usually doesn't look. You can probably get away without him seeing it. Especially what you're doing in your bedroom here, there, and there. No one is, you know, you can, because he's got to look at something so lowly, because it's so far away from him. But that's if he is part of the system. And if he has a position on a certain perch within, then that's very far. But if he's not within the system at all, he's completely outside of it, and the whole system is nothing to him, and it's all encircled in him, and he is everywhere and in it all, so he knows it intrinsically, and nothing is too small and nothing is too big. He's not within the context of world. There's no difference between heaven and earth, which means in the broader sense, spiritual and physical. Remember we said that Bilam was laughing in his heart and saying, hey, God is watching inappropriate stuff, because it says that God counts when during an intimacy of the Jewish people. God is so excited about the Jewish babies being born that God is like waiting and say, when am I going to create the righteous person, the tzaddik? And therefore, at the moment of conception, he is, so to speak, blessing the seed to create the tzaddik. That means he's observing all the time. So Bilam said, such a holy being looking at something like this, what's with him? So Bilam got punished. He was blinded. Because he made a mistake. He thought that the whole coming into existence, he was a great philosopher, but he wasn't as great as he thought he was. He thought that God is, creation happens through a process of worlds. So he felt that the spiritual realms are more God's arena. It's God's neighborhood, the upper world. And he thought that God creates the world through enclosing himself in the world. That's why there is a difference between up and down. And it was foreign in his eyes. That, or not just by Bilam and by all the, his like. That God should, it's very distant in their minds, that Hashem should lower himself down, lamata, so below, bashgacha pratis, in with individual divine providence, ba'aretz mitachas, and the earth below, kamoi bashamayim imal, like in the heavens above. That's why they say, ala shamayim kavodo, his glory is on the heavens. On the heavens, yes, as the verse says, exalted, ramal kol goyim Hashem, exalted over the nations he is, ala shamayim kavodo, his glory is on the heavens. But what do we answer to that? Ava be'emes, but in truth, b'makom gedulasoi, in the place of his greatness, if you want to know his real greatness, sham in visunusa, as the Talmud says, wherever you see God's greatness, you can see it together with his humility. His greatness is that he can be at the lowest place at the same time. And that is shemachma shemagbil u'shaves, like we continue, mikashem elokeinu, who is like God the way we understand him, the secret that the Jewish people have been given by Abraham. Now what? And that Chassidus so eloquently explains how God is so outside of above everything. So he's a magbi, he's sitting above and beyond everything. And therefore, mashpili lirois, he lowers himself to see because it's not higher and it's not even lower. Asher legabei soviv kolam, and to the soviv, she'ein begedet alman kolal, is not within the context of worlds, ein shum hefresh ma'ilamata, there is no difference between above and below. Ukolam mamish chashiv, and everything is equal. Umitachas royas oilam, like we explained, God's arms wrap themselves around all worlds. Okay, so this is the half point of the discourse, which we're going to continue really next week. So we said, well, Mashiach will come, the Soveh will be revealed. The Soveh will suddenly will appear. Will be in our consciousness. How does that happen? That's through the Torah and the mitzvot that we do now. That's how we connect our reality to the Soveh. We make his reality, introduce it into our reality. And that's what he says, in order for the encompassing light to shine and reveal itself within the Mamali, which is the idea of the Yichud, which is the intimacy between the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the Sovev, the transcendent light with the Shekhinah, for the few two to merge, that job is given to the observance of mitzvot. And that is al yaday esek haTorah. That is through the Torah study. Koil doidi, the voice of my beloved, hine zeba, he is coming. Behold, he is coming. When was this verse said? This was said at Sinai. God himself is breaking his way through this impossible pass. And he is passing through this impossible path. And opening up a channel to infuse into our reality his truth. And what happens in the end, we get to see eye to eye. We get to see it in our realm in the same way like he sees it. And now he's going to explain how that's achieved when we study Torah. We're going to leave that part, Bezus Hashem, for next week, where we're going to learn about the difference of the Mishnah, Raisa, and the Talmudic statements, how they reflect this light differently. Although, let's understand something, we're dealing with the Soviv light, so it should be everywhere equal. How can it be different in the Mishnah? So that we'll try to explain. And then, and how in preparation to activate that all, we first have to expose our own soul. Only when we do it as a soul, we have to uncover our soul, which is through prayer, then we study, that's when we achieve this fusion, and we bring the messianic revelation. Shall we continue Bezrat Hashem next week, Thursday night? hopefully already in the third temple. I really have energy to go another 2 hours. However, we got to sing tomorrow morning, Rosh Chodesh. So we're going to cap it out.